You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, SFU's community radio station broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.
Hello and welcome to Viewpoints. On today's show, we'll first turn to the province of Quebec, where a vigil was held to mourn the deaths of Montrealers experiencing homelessness.
I know most people think that, oh yeah, they're out in the streets, they're lazy, they don't want to work. That's not the fact. There's a story behind that. There's trauma behind it.
Abraham Benedict has been elected as the new Ontario Regional Chief.
It's about making sure that we're doing the best that we can as elected leadership to protect our people, to protect our jurisdiction, and to ensure that where we are exercising our rights, that there's no interference from the external governments.
An American goshawk attacks Quebec trekkers and prompts the temporary closure of the popular Kingsbury Trail.
He's known for his aggressive behavior, but mainly in the breeding season. He will defend his territory for a long distance, a few hundred meters usually.
And in Saville, New Brunswick, local artists want residents to create their own dummy or puppet for this year's Sappy Fest Arts Festival. 50 giant puppets seated for a show.
It will be a moment to remember, make a really good photograph of having as many members of the community self-representing their doppelgangers or avatars or dummies, as they're calling them, in the seats of the theater. And they're going to have some secret shows in there of some musicians or poets or other people kind of on a little stage giving a performance to the dummies. And there will be some free seats as well for the public to come in and join. Sappy Fest for Dummies.
Welcome to Viewpoints, local news nationwide.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Welcome. Thanks for keeping us company. Boris Chassaigne here with you for the next 30 minutes. Our first stop will be a sad but necessary one. We'll drop into the province of Quebec, where in the midst of a heat wave, mourners gathered in Cabot Square on June 11th for a vigil for those experiencing homelessness and for those who have died in Montreal since 2021. Many of them were Indigenous. Resilience Montreal and the Native Women's Shelter of Montreal co-organized the vigil, which featured photos and called on attendees to share memories of those lost. Over 30 people were on the board, and attendees named more throughout the event. Jules Mugiel was on the scene to speak with organizers and attendees.
There were tears, anger, and lots of memories shared in Cabot Square on Wednesday as Montrealers paid their respects to over 30 people who've died since 2021, all of whom experienced homelessness.
I miss everyone. I got no more.
I know most people think that, oh yeah, they're out in the streets, they're lazy, they don't want to work. That's not the fact. There's a story behind that. There's trauma behind it.
This is Maggie Cispadio, lead intervention worker at Resilience Montreal, a local day shelter supporting the folks around Cabot Square. They co-organized Wednesday's vigil with the Native Women's Shelter of Montreal.
These were the people that were the strongest people I know personally and, that survived on the streets and that knew how to live on the streets. You know, for me, I know it's not easy living on the streets. You know, it's the danger to it and the addiction that comes with it. Sometimes it's just too late because of the addiction they have.
She says that people are often just trying to survive with the cards they've been dealt. But this can lead to dangerous situations and preventable deaths.
A lot of them will walk around at night or use just to stay up for their safety. Like one of our clients that was a regular was found in at the metro station in a washroom. You know, he didn't need to die like that. He was set, promised, I don't know about the promise, but to have a home because he was living under the bridge. You know, one of the people, and it was too late. We could have found and worked together as a team and worked hard to get him where he needed to get.
Most of the ceremony on Wednesday was for sharing memories of the folks who've been lost. Vanessa Laprise says she knew three of the people being honored.
Mohawk Mike took care of a lot of people. There's too many stories to tell. When he was alive, he was somebody that And they all knew me through him. Nobody can touch me if he's around. Nobody can even look at me. Melanie was like a sister to me. She came to stay with me while she's going in and out of her boyfriend's. Help me out, cook, clean, take care of my son, you know? And I still had a place. She doesn't know that I'm homeless now because it was in December when I became homeless due to the system and nothing of what I've done. Melanie just got her place and she wrote me a message and said she just got her own place and her own TV and her own space. And then I found out about her passing. I still don't know how she passed away. I don't normally ask. I don't like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, unfortunately, I know pretty much everyone on the board. And it's almost like, where do you get started?
Speaking now is Resilience's David Chapman. He says that many of the issues that push someone to live on the streets are getting worse.
People say, well, why is there like 36 people now on these boards? And why is that? And it's a number of factors that compound together, okay? So one is a housing crisis and the inaccessibility of housing. And for the homeless population, it's almost impossible because often they don't have references and, you know, a great credit. And so they're going to be at the bottom of the priority list for any new apartments coming open. Also, there's the rise of more dangerous drugs like fentanyl. The third factor is you have in Quebec, and particularly in Montreal, this policy where there's a continual pattern of clearing encampments without a real destination. Okay, so what happens is, for example, the situation under the Ville-Marie Bridge last year that Resilience was quite involved with. You had a number of people living under that bridge, and they had, as a small community, a little bit of safety and community, other people to watch their stuff, other people with naloxone kits, should you overdose. And we warned that if you just boot them out without a real destination, where they're going to end up is in a more dangerous circumstance. They're going to be alone in abandoned buildings or, you know, in dark alleyways or in tunnels under the city or further away in forested areas alone. No one's ever held accountable for this kind of stuff.
There's anger as well as sadness at Wednesday's vigil because of a sense that advocates aren't being listened to by the folks in power.
Take this girl right here, Natasha. I went with her to the new lovely mega hospital by Vendôme that should be the latest and the greatest. She didn't have her health card and she was in really rough shape, and she's here, she's getting hassled at the front desk at the hospital for not having a health card, and this is precisely why she's avoided going to the hospital for so long in the first place. And not only is she hassled, but she's hassled right in front of me, who, you know, is an intervention worker, and I got my little Resilience Montreal shirt, so you'd think they might be on their best behavior, you know. But that's a really common narrative. A lot of the young Indigenous women on this board died of preventable illnesses that, you know, if they were caught much earlier, they wouldn't be dead. And yet, one of the challenges is that they don't have confidence in how they're going to be treated when they go to the hospital. And the problem is that we still live in a province where the premier's, you know, just denying systemic racism. And so it's a pretty steep hill to climb, is what I'm saying.
Organizers stressed again and again that they want a Resilience in every borough in the city. LaPrise says that for folks experiencing homelessness, that support can be life-saving.
Just for a part for my Indigenous community, if you're listening, and up above, I love you. And thank you for being a part of saving me too and having this life to live here on Earth and still being here. They have a big part of why I'm still here. Or I'd be on that board too. And Resilience. If Resilience wasn't here, there would be a lot more of us on that board.
I'm Jules Bijal. Thanks for listening.
Do you have questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca.
Abraham. Sam Benedict, Grand Chief of the Mohawk Council of Akwesasne, has just been elected as the Ontario Regional Chief. The election took place on June 12th as part of the Chiefs of Ontario Annual Chiefs Assembly on Six Nations. Five candidates were running for the role of Regional Chief, which was held in accordance with the traditional election processes. Benedict was named the new Regional Chief after the fourth ballot, where he received 50 votes. His nearest opponent, Dean Sayers, got 48. The latest on this with Andrew Dow in Oshawakin, Ontario.
Abram Benedict has been elected as the Ontario Regional Chief for the Chiefs of Ontario. Benedict was elected during the organization's annual Chiefs Assembly, which is currently taking place on Six Nations. Benedict was one of five candidates seeking election, the other four candidates being Rudy Turtle, Travis Boissonneau, Dean Sayers, and now former Ontario Regional Chief Glenn Hare were all in attendance at the Six Nations Sports and Cultural Memorial Center during the June 12th election. The election, which was held under traditional election processes, went to the fourth ballot, where Abram Benedict was successful in securing 50 votes over 48 votes to runner-up Dean Sayers. Benedict is currently sitting as the Grand Chief of the Mohawk Council of Akwesasne and will make his opening remarks as the Ontario Regional Chief during tomorrow's opening address for the third and final day of the annual Chiefs Assembly. Benedict addressed the chiefs and leadership in attendance at the assembly before today's election and spoke on the important role that the regional chief's office plays in connecting communities and advocating for support on their behalf throughout the province.
The Chiefs of Ontario office, I feel that it's a great organization. It's an organization that was empowered by the chiefs and councils before us, and it will continue to exist. 50 years is a long time. Same length as our current Regional Chief's marriage. That's amazing. Happy anniversary to you, Glenn, and your wife. But as we look at the organization, you know, as a community leader, my vision has always been the same. It starts from the top. We set the tone, we set the message of our expectations to the organization, but we also embrace communication and embrace the systems that exist that have been built before us. We have seen leaders come before us at various levels where they have tried to change the systems of the organizations that represent us from the outside in. And that's not an approach. We know as community leaders that we work together with our council within the existing structures to make it a better place. And I want to see the regional office continue to build upon relationships. I have made it a priority of mine to build relationships with all levels of government, being in Ontario, being in Quebec, being at the federal level. And I can tell you that you don't always sit across the table from people that you like. But in the work that we do, it's not about liking people. It's about making sure that we're doing the best that we can as elected leadership to protect our people, to protect our jurisdiction, and to ensure that where we are exercising our rights, that there's no interference from the external governments.
He also spoke on the Chiefs of Ontario and the role of the regional chief to stand behind communities and show support where it's needed, compared to being a governing body representing those First Nations communities.
The Ontario Regional Chief does not represent the people. You represent the people. And we have seen leadership in the past. We have seen leaders, whether it be through Chiefs of Ontario, different levels, saying, oh, well, you know, these people are saying that, these people are saying that. The community, you are their representative, not the Chiefs of Ontario. The Chiefs of Ontario is a regional advocacy body that creates relationships, supports you in your leadership, supports the PTOs that exist through those structures, and receives its mandate from you, who are elected. The grassroots is with you, and the rights holder are with you. And that, again, as I said, the message starts from the top, and I will continue to embrace that message if elected as the Ontario Regional Chief and say that we support communities. We're there to advocate. We're there to protect and defend them, because they are the ones that are elected by their community to represent their community, not the Regional Chief, not the AFN.
Benedict asserted that his focus will be to advocate at the different levels of government, both provincially and federally, to ensure that the province's First Nations communities will have their voices heard.
And if as elected as regional chief, I will make sure that we keep the pulse on regional provincial legislation, provincial regulations that impact our people and communicate that back through to you, to the rights holders.
Hello, I'm Andrew Dow in Six Nations, Ontario. You are tuned in to Viewpoints.
Many hikers in the province of Quebec have recently reported being attacked by an aggressive bird. The report was taken seriously by Les Sentiers de l'Estrie, which decided to close its Kingsbury Trail until July 15th. The hikers think they were attacked by the American goshawk, formerly known as the Northern goshawk. The bird is known for its aggressive behavior, particularly during the breeding season, when it defends its territory and nest. To provide insight into the situation, Derek Bullard in Sherbrooke, Quebec, spoke with a biologist and executive director of QuebecOiseau.org, QuebecBirds.org, Jean-Sébastien Guenette.
The American goshawk is known for its aggressive behavior, particularly during the breeding season. The bird defends its territory and nests vigorously.
But the goshawk is it's a fairly large bird of prey. It's in the same family as the Cooper's hawk and the Sharpshin hawk. The two birds that we see very more often in cities and towns. The goshawk breeds mainly in the forest, so it's a bit rarer than the two other hawk species. And he is known for his aggressive behavior, but mainly in the breeding season. So it will defend its territory life in the event of an intrusion.
In light of recent events, concerning reports have surfaced regarding attacks on hikers. So we asked our guests, what kind of behavior can hikers expect from this bird, and are these attacks dangerous?
Usually the bird will emit some warning sounds, so it will defend its territory from a few a long distance, a few hundred meters usually. And they will emit a very high high sound that usually the bird watchers know that sound. Mm-hmm. After that, if people continue to get toward the nest, the bird can dive and pass close by those people. The contact are very rare usually, but it can happen. Personally, I never heard injuries caused by this species.
As our discussion progressed into safety measures for hikers facing the aggressive bird, I direct an important question to Jean-Sébastien Guenette. What precautions should hikers take if they hear these warning sounds?
Yeah, the density of the birds are not very high, so the chance of being in the territory of goshawk are very low. But if we hear that sound, I would suggest to people to just turn back and when they hear that, and not try to defy it. Okay. Because it can attack.
As we know, the Sentiers de l'Estrie decided to close the trail in Kingsbury until mid-July because of these attacks. We asked our guests, how significant is this closure for both the public and the birds?
Yeah, I think it was the good decision to make to close those trails during the breeding season. So I think they already closed it, and they will open it after the mid July or end of July. So when the birds are less aggressive, the young have fledged, so the birds are less aggressive at that period. So I think it's a good decision for the birds and for the people.
As our conversation ends, I turn the focus towards the organization Jean-Sébastien Guenette represents and the work they do.
Quebec Oiseau is a non-profit organization. We mainly work to promote and develop bird watching or birding. We do a lot of work to follow and protect birds and their habitat. So we work a lot with species at risk. Swallows, chimney swift, and farmland species, bird species. And
I'm Derek Bullard.
Care with Viewpoints.
And to close the show, an invitation made by Sackville-based artists Sherry Boyle and Graham Patterson could very well produce a very interesting result. They're both working to convince Sackville residents to create dummies modeled after themselves that will be part of a special audience during the Sappy Fest Music and Arts Festival this August. The artists held an idea jam workshop last week at the Struts Gallery, and Erica Butler was there to hear from Boyle, as well as some potential dummy makers. Boyle says the plan is to gather as many Sackville dummies as possible into the Ralph Pickard Bell Library Theater over the festival weekend. "It will be a moment to remember," says Boyle, "having as many members of the community self-representing themselves in the seats of the theater." Erica Butler.
What is happening here?
Oh, this is Sappy Fest for Dummies. So I've always come to Sappy Fest as an artist and made some kind of project that usually has to do with like a fairground caricature. Like, we've all gone to a carnival and maybe got your picture done, like a cartoon done. And over the years, it keeps changing and morphing to the point where I realize I think that the community needs to do their own portraits now. So this is about coming and representing yourself in your own town, whether you like Sappy Fest or not, whether you know anything about it, or whether you're an artist or not. And I think it's really interesting when people have to come up with a craft, try something out that they haven't done. And although everybody's done Halloween decorations or a scarecrow or a porch dummy or something, so it's not that far off. But I like the idea of that people are going to make a version of themselves. And then we're going to gather them all into the Mount Allison Third Floor Library Theater, which is a space that's not going to exist in a few years when they tear that library down. So it's kind of historical. It'll be a moment to remember. Make a really good photograph of having as many members of the community self-representing their doppelgangers or avatars or dummies, as they're calling them, in the seats of the theater. And they're going to be there over Sappy Fest weekend. And they're going to have some secret shows in there of some musicians or poets or other people kind of on a little stage giving a performance to the dummies. And there will be some free seats as well for the public to come in and join. So this is Sappy Fest for Dummies.
Okay, now I've seen you, you had a big crowd here tonight for this workshop, and I've seen you at the Sackville Farmers Market. Mm. So what are you getting a sense of what the uptake is going to be like?
There are a lot of people that are committing to this. I am amazed and thrilled, and the ball is rolling. People are getting into it, and the more that do it, the more that want to do it. So there's a real kind of, there's at least, I feel like we've got 30 people pledged to make a dummy right now, and those are just the folks that are showing up to the events and pledging, promising to make their dummy. All these other people out there haven't maybe done the pledge, but they're all talking about it and saying they're going to do it. So we might get a full crowd. We might get a totally full house here.
Maybe standing room only in the theater.
Totally. Kind of flopping room only.
Are you going to be making a dummy?
I am, because I pledged, and I really want to win that raffle. So I'm inspired by the win.
Yeah. So the raffle is to have one of these artists make a dummy for you of a person of your choosing.
Yes.
Do you know who you're going to choose?
Not yet. There's many people that I would like to have a dummy of, so it's going to be a hard choice.
Are there people in Sackville that you're hoping you will see represented in that theater when Sappy Fest comes around? Is there anyone special in Sackville you'd like to see sitting in one of those seats as a dummy?
My friends, my kids, that'd be cool. Like little dummies.
What do you think? Are you going to be making a dummy?
I think I am. I saved up some clothes that I think will fit well with what I want to do. And yarn for hair is what I'm thinking. Let's see where it goes.
All right. Are there some people in Sackville who you'd like to see dummied and sitting in that theater during Sappy Fest? Who would you like to see in that theater?
I think my husband would be a great candidate, because he wouldn't go otherwise. At least his dummy would.
Did you get some what you'll do?
Yeah, I still don't have it totally planned out, but it definitely made it seem a lot more doable. Yeah.
Yeah. So the session tonight made it seem like, oh, maybe you can actually accomplish this.
Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely.
What about you? Are you going to participate?
I'm definitely going to participate. I'm sort of dreading making a dummy, but I really want to see 50 dummies fill that library. And I think Sherry and Graham's idea for SavvyFest is brilliant, like a way to engage the larger town who, you know, may have some hostilities towards the festival or indifference to it. I feel like this could be just an excuse for other people to engage.
Now, do you have any requests for who you'd like to see sitting in the theater?
I want to see everybody in this room. Like, this is, I used to work here at Struts, and I don't think I've ever seen it so full of unfamiliar faces. Like, I think a lot of students from the school came. So there's a pledge, I understand, that you can fill in to pledge your involvement, and I hope everybody filled that in. I just like to see everybody. I want them to run out of seats in the cinema.
I'm with the MASI program, so Japanese exchange students that come to Mauna to learn English, and I think we'll collectively make a dummy or two.
Good to hear. So what did you think of this project?
It's different. Yeah, I've never done a project like this before, so I'm a little bit nervous, but yeah, the explanation made it sound easy enough, so hopefully we can come up with something.
I've been asking people this, so I'll ask you. Is there someone that you're hoping to see represented in that theater?
Well, you know, there's a new baby in the community named Marta, and I would really love to see baby Marta in the theater in our friendship group. I don't think Marta's going to be making her own dummy, but I feel one of us might end up making a little baby Marta to pop into the theater.
That's Sackville-based artist Sherry Boyle, who, along with fellow artist Graham Patterson, is spearheading SavvyFest for Dummies. You can find out more about the project, including how to make your own dummy, through Struts Gallery. Boyle and Patterson are hosting a hands-on dummy-making workshop on Thursday, June 27th at 6 p.m. at Struts Gallery.
Imagine what that 50-seat theater will look like with all these dummies seated waiting for a show that will never come. Thanks to Erica Butler for that original story. And to all our journalists this week, Andrew Dow, Derek Bullard, and Jules Bugiel. Our national editors are Victoria Fenner and Maureen McEwen. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and your local radio station. My name is Boris Chassaigne, your host and producer. Thanks for being with us this week, and until the next, ciao.
Questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca.